Well, interesting concepts with our guest tonight. Lee Bowman will be back with the author of The Seagull Project in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Lee, you talk about obsessions and compulsions. I have to replace burned out light bulbs every time I see them. How about that?
I understand. I'm very much the same way.
I never was that way, but something happened to me. I think somebody dropped me on my head or something. I don't know what happened. Now, back to this creation. If it thinks, if it's intelligent, why is it light? Why does it have the physics behind light?
There is a set of experiments known as the double slit series of experiments. The double slit, which was the classic original experiment, which seemed to suggest that light had consciousness, is actually a very complex experiment, one I wouldn't even attempt to verbalize. But it has a modified experiment known as the quantum eraser, and that's like pencil eraser, quantum eraser experiment. And what this interesting experiment showed, if you took the experiment in its original form, light entered the experimental setup, traveled through the setup, and then at the end, it was identified exactly, what had happened.
Sure.
So there was the beginning, the middle, and the end. What the experimenters did was they made a change right at the very end of the experiment, one which in no way should have affected the pathways that light took in the middle of the experiment. And yet, that was exactly what happened. Light actually altered its behavior, is how physicists termed it, in the middle of the experiment, even though changes were made at the very end. Now, for humans, that is absolutely a ridiculous, impossible feat. You know, we know of no other entity that can do things like that. But when you think about it, at least from the quantum physics perspective, you have to recall that for light, time does not exist. So theoretically, the light which entered the experiment at the beginning, traveled through the setup in the middle, and identified the changes at the end of the experiment, and could easily have then gone back to the middle of the experiment, changed pathways, changed their behavior, as the researchers called it. And even though it seemed to be an impossible feat for us as humans, for light, it's not at all unusual, because time does not exist. And that basically is the explanation for the bizarre behavior of light particles in the quantum eraser experiment. Physicists actually attributed that light was acting as if it was conscious, and that's how the conscious characteristic was attributed to light.
Conscious to me sounds also alive.
Yes, it really does. There are Nobel Prize winners who looked at the experiment and just scratched their heads and couldn't offer any explanation. We have Richard Feynman, who's a Nobel Prize winner and physicist, who states that this type of experiment is just impossible, absolutely impossible to explain. And then we have Niels Bohr, another physicist and Nobel Prize winner, who made the great comment that those who are not shocked when they first come across quantum physics could not possibly have understood it. I mean, I love that statement, because what that indicates is that the more you understand quantum physics, the more shocked and confused you really should be.
When you, as a doctor, began to work with reviving, let's say, your patients,
yes,
many of whom you even thought were dead, I would guess.
Yes.
What did they tell you?
Well, I've had people basically tell me how upset they were with the physicians, and that's what my wife is, an ER doctor.
For bringing them back?
Yes. Isn't that bizarre?
How about that for gratitude?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what the human nature in us, would expect. We'd expect thanks and appreciation. But these people were in such a state of bliss and euphoria, you know, in the light of God.
And it was real.
Yeah.
Yes, to them it was.
To them it was, and of course I believe that it was real. So, you know, it's difficult for us as physicians to understand a patient reacting with bitterness and anger when you've just resuscitated them. But, you know, when you realize what they've been through, it really does make a lot of sense.
Is there any way, Lee, that we could be wrong, that upon death, that's it? It just ends.
I don't believe so. And let me give you what I consider one of the most scientific arguments for why light, spirit, knowledge continues. And again, this is all proven scientifically. If theoretically, if you take all matter at the end of 10 to the 36th power years, so we're talking a long, long time. That's a 1 with 36 zeros following it, that number of years. It is proven that all matter will decompose to pure energy or light. So, you know, from that argument alone, it's not ashes to ashes and dust to dust. It's rather ashes to light and dust to light. We will end up as light. When everything else is gone, light will be the omega. It was the alpha, and now it's, you know, science has proven it's the omega. Again, just like the biblical descriptions. So I feel it is not dust to dust and ashes to ashes.
Let's hope.
Again,
not.
Based upon science.
Do you think more and more scientists are beginning to believe that?
My own experience is that the sad answer to that question is no. And honestly, I don't understand why, because I feel the arguments are out there. All I can perceive is that they just aren't reading the scientific literature that is out there, because it does exist.
Is there science behind it?
In fact, my whole belief system is based upon science. For me, it's science or nothing, and I feel it's there. And that's what converted me from an atheist to a believer.
Did your wife see that change?
In me, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Again, we would come home when we were first practicing medicine, and we would talk about these events and how my wife, being an ER doctor, she obviously practiced with a lot of atheistic physicians by her side. And they, for one, just could not understand people coming back, showing this bitterness and anger. And we would discuss these cases at night. And so she did see the transformation when I went from a questioning, you know, skeptic back in the 70s. And every day as I read more and our experiences grew in medicine, yes, she saw the transition.
Tell me a little bit about, of course, your first work, God at the Speed of Light, how that was inspired by the CBS show Joan of Arcadia. How did that happen?
Well, that was a funny story, because I was like many people. We do these what are called ego searches on the Internet. That's where you look up your own name and, you know, just see what comes up. And I was doing this after the publication of God at the Speed of Light, more to see how its sales were going. I was a first-time author and still not sure what all this writing, you know, was going to entail and how successful the book might be. And so I had done one of these ego searches, and lo and behold, one of the searches came up like Hollywood producer, Joan of Arcadia, and I thought, whoa, what, you know, what's this all about? So I checked into it, and Barbara Hall, who is a quite a renowned, respected producer in Hollywood, who's done multiple other shows like moonlighting and northern exposure,
sure.
judging Amy, and, you know, it just goes on and on. She had held a press conference where she had discussed this new show that was coming out, Joan of Arcadia. And she mentioned several physics books that had inspired her to create the series and God at the Speed of Light, and she mentioned my name was one of them. I immediately felt a horrible accident had happened and that she had my name confused with someone else, and you know, I just couldn't believe that my luck would be so good that someone like Barbara Hall would have picked up one of my books and given it that type of acknowledgement. So I was, you know, you talk about how one person can transform your life, and for me, Barbara Hall was that person.
That did it, didn't it?
No, you talk about luck or good fortune, that was it.
Were there any other paranormal events that surrounded your work and your research that got you convinced that you were on this path, this correct path?
Well, there are a few other experiences which are very compatible with, you know, my own research. There is, and I'm actually looking for one of the...
Because you know what boggles me? I mean, we talk about the light and we talk, you know, and I'm a believer, but what I can't understand is how sometimes horrible things happen to people who try. Horrible things happen to good people. I get these calls every night, especially on Fridays with open lines, and, you know, there's not a night that goes by like that when someone calls and relates some horrible story that happened to them, some event, and they're good people.
Yes.
I mean, why does this happen? If there's this light out there, Lee, why does it happen?
Well, first of all, let me answer the first part of the question. Some of other phenomena, supernatural phenomena related to light, there are things like supernatural rescue where someone might be walking in a fog and see a light which diverts their attention, and the next morning they find that had they continued in their current path, you know, something life-threatening would have happened. One instance was a man walking in a fog one morning and saw a light, heard a voice, and turned and altered the direction of his path. Had he continued, he would have, you know, gone off a cliff. That's just one example. There are past life regressions where people describe their past lives as actually being beings of light, which again, you know, fits in to my research. Many near-death experiencers have witnessed, when they were on the other side, have witnessed beams of light emanating from the earth.
Like orbs?
No, they're actual beams of light coming out of the earth. And they would ask the spirits that they were communicating with, you know, what these beams of light were. And they were told that they were prayers of people on Earth.
Really?
And that's why, actually, we have both Damian Brinkley and Betty Eady.
Oh, yeah. Know them both.
Gave very similar descriptions of prayers coming out of the Earth like that. So that just addresses the first part. Why bad things happen to good people? My own feeling, and this really has very little to do with light, but it's just a concept I believe in. I feel the best explanation for that, in my own viewpoint, is karma and reincarnation. It's the only explanation that I can come up with for why a good, loving God would allow something, you know, so horrible to happen to some people.
Explain that. What do you mean by karma and reincarnation?
Well, karma and reincarnation, of course, are the Eastern religion philosophies, which basically for karma indicates that when bad things happen, it's because of something bad that we have done to others in past lives, in former incarnations. Reincarnation is the concept that because we didn't lead a perfect or near-perfect life in our last incarnation, that we are having to relive another life, trying to get it right this time. Once we do get it right, then we go on to basically nirvana. is how the Eastern religions refer to it. And there are many of them. I mean, the Hindus, the Buddhists, Sikhs, Jains, even the Scientologists believe in reincarnation. It's not a concept which is widely ascribed to by Christians or even Jews, but if you look in the right places in our own Bible, the Hebrew Bible as well, there are instances which certainly suggest reincarnation. And I can give you some of those if you're interested.
Yeah, please.
Well, of course, we're familiar with eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, which comes out of a passage in Exodus. In John, Jesus said to his disciples, "Before Abraham was, I am." And again, that's just a very vague suggestion. In Malachi, the Old Testament, there's an excerpt stating, "Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes." And if you connect that to a couple of passages in the New Testament, it fits.
Has the terrible day come yet? I don't think so.
No.
Yet.
That's true, and I can see where that could be a bit of a conflict, but let me read this passage in Matthew. "Truly I being Jesus, say to you, among those born of women, there is risen no one greater than John the Baptist." And then a few words beyond, "If you are willing to accept it, he is Elijah who is come. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Now that ties in so well with that passage in Malachi, being that John the Baptist is being suggested as a reincarnation of Elijah. And there's another passage in Matthew which states almost the same thing. "After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John his brother and led them up a high mountain. He was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun." Now, again, that's another passage comparing a prophet or Jesus to light. "And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah, talking with them." Let's see. "The disciples asked Jesus, 'Then why do the scribes say that first Elijah must come?' And Jesus replied, 'Elijah does come, and he is to restore all things. But I tell you that Elijah has already come, and they did not know him.'"
Well, here's the big question, though.
Yes.
What comes first, the science or the spirituality? Can you distinguish that?
Which comes first, the science or the spirituality?
Yep. Is the light science or is it spiritual?
I think it's both.
And do you think it always was both?
Well, I think it was, and we just did not recognize it for its spiritual nature until really quantum physics and some of these other phenomena have really been scientifically investigated.
I think then as science gets more and more proficient, it's probably going to get some of these answers that we don't have today.
I think that is absolutely true. Absolutely. I think it's just a matter of time, technology, and our testing abilities with the super colliders that we have now, such as the one in Switzerland. I think they're going to be revealing a lot more answers including those on the spiritual side.
Where do we get the book, The Seagull Project?
You can get that really at any internet website, would be my recommendation. Amazon certainly carries it. My publisher carries it. My website, www.baumannbooks, and that's Bauman, B-A-U-M-A-N-N, baumannbooks.com, has a direct link to my publisher's website where it can be
purchased. All right. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines, and what I'd like is I would like you to relate your story about going into the light or what you think the light may be. Our special guest tonight, Dr. Lee Baumann. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back with Lee in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM along with your phone calls. We'll be right back. Okay, the Conscious Life Expo for me is over with here in Los Angeles. Now onward to the next event, the Psychic Spectrum Expo in Seattle. Friday, February 22nd, I'll be live from our affiliate KVI. And then Saturday will be this major event. There'll be a meet and greet, a private dinner for you to participate in, and we'll all have some fun. You can go up to the psychicspectrum.com website. That's www.psychicspectrum.com, and get all the information you need. Other guests there will be Mr. Richard Hoagland, Daniel Brinkley, Jenny Cockle, Dr. Robin Falkov, Glynis McCants, the numerologist, will be there, Michael Tesserian as well, and so many other noted coast-to-coast guests at the Psychic Spectrum Expo in Seattle over the weekend of February 22nd. You all set for Valentine's Day, Lee? You all ready?
I am.
Excellent. Me too. Me too. A lot of people out there that you care about.
Absolutely.
Which is another thing about this whole feeling of the light. I think you're right. It does turn you into a different person once your belief system changes.
Well, it has me. It has me. I'm certainly more, as I mentioned earlier, I'm easier to get along with. I am more receptive to when bad things do happen. I'm able to accept them easier and not dwell on them as I used to in the past. So it has been a very pleasant, positive change for me.
Do you remember the movie Poltergeist?
Oh, absolutely.
The little lady kept screaming, "Don't go into the light!" You know, what did she mean by that? I thought you were supposed to go into the light. I guess unless she was afraid if you went into the light, you'd physically be gone.
No, I can't resolve that either, because my feeling is much like yours. We really want to be looking for the light. Many people have actually had near-death experiences where they've been immersed in total darkness. And from the research that I've done and from the experiences that I've read, if these people will only cry out, you know, "Dear God, Jesus, help me," or, you know, "Where are you?" something on that order, suddenly the light very often will appear to them and they are no longer in the darkness. But it takes that step for them to, you know, call out for aid and assistance rather than trying to do it on their own.
Let's take some calls here. In the next hour, we'll devote the entire hour to phone calls from people. Let's go to our west of the Rockies line. Gary, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Where are you calling from, Gary?
KSMA 1240 Santa Maria.
And California.
KMSX.
Yep.
Okay. With biophotonic light interacting with DNA, the HeartMath Institute's done a lot of work on that, and George has conducted some experiments itself. Is that a truly tangible interaction where your biophotonic light either imprints or transmits directly to the DNA and then collectively affects mass consciousness? And would the color, this particular either ultra, very ultraviolet or different variances of deep infrared, correlate to astrology as in color? So if you're with somebody completely incompatible with you, with your color, even though it's invisible color, and several imprintings like in a promiscuous lifestyle based on the frequency implanted by the astrology, does that sound feasible to you?
Well, Gary, thank you for the question. I've read some of that material, but I have not been able to comprehend or at least be able to make a connection with my research. So it's one of those areas where if I cannot make a scientific connection, I maintain an open mind. I don't close it out completely, but I haven't yet accepted it. So based upon that, I really have no explanation. I can't offer any helpful acknowledgments as to why some of the observations occurred that did. I wish I could.
Are you, everybody saw?
What was that, Gary?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you left the light. Oh, that was done a lot of research with the HeartMath Institute and my own personal correlation, and I've done thousands and thousands of charts, is that from conception through birth, you're set up with a particular pattern of color which corresponds to your biophotonic light, and you've had guests on before. And your heart math, your photonic light can be felt almost 20 feet away, measured 20 feet away from your heart. Those that are promiscuous, male and female, imprint all of that light until you just become dark, and that affects the oxytocin, especially in the female brain, which is the bonding chemical, which is most strong at childbirth. And I think a lot of Christians miss the boat because the Bible demeans astrology as soothsaying so strongly. But personality types, especially the position of the sun and the moon, bodies 85% salt water, same salt water content as the ocean. And when you set up the vibration of the biophotonic light with the same forces that pull our tides 6, 8, 10 feet, also are pulling the magnetic and electroactivity of your brain, which corresponds to the biophotonic light that's being transmitted. That biophotonic light, when used in mass, in prayer, consciousness experiments, is a tangible thing that goes on forever. And what the piece that you just gave me, it ties into the universal God. And the Bible, I think, is right on the money with not being promiscuous before marriage. But I also see a huge, huge correlation between people that are compatible astrologically. I'm not talking about the 12 signs. You got to factor in the moon sign. So there's 144 different personality types out there, and you're only going to be compatible with about a third of them. And if you hook up with somebody that isn't compatible with you on a biophotonic light wavelength, if you want to use that word, it's going to grate and grate. And ultimately, and I think you've experienced this, George, some people just absolutely bring out the worst in you. They rub you the wrong way.
Well, that's those negative people with the negative energy, the negative karma. I think he's right, Lee.
Yes, I mean, everything he states, I have no problem with it at all. It certainly is compatible with everything I've observed. I just cannot defend it based upon my scientific research.
All right, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. Hi there, you're on the air with us. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, he was earlier talking about when God was speaking with Moses through the burning bush.
Yes.
And in that story, God told Moses to get into a crevice. Okay. And when Moses came down, his hair had turned white and his face was red because he had been in the presence of the Lord, which indicates an extreme heat for his face to have turned red.
What's your point, hon?
Well, I believe that God is light and that he is everywhere and in all things, and that he is energy. And energy, you know, it never dies. It never ends. It just changes form.
I was just going to say, not to interrupt, but I love the way you phrased that, because whether you look at Einstein's E equals MC squared equation, or whether you look at how electrons bounce around inside of an atom because of their photonic contributions, it's all an argument that light is an integral part of matter, and that matter is just a transmutation of energy or light. So, yes, I think you phrased it wonderfully, the fact that light and God are everywhere. They're a part of everything we touch and everything we see. You can't escape light or God, for that matter.
Do you think merely being good allows you to tap into this light?
No, I think...
That's not enough, is it?
Well, I think people who are on the edge, who are on the fence, you know, with some tangible amount of evil, they're still going to be able to tap into the light if they ask for it. I think they do have to voluntarily be receptive to the light and ask for God's help. And it's those who refuse to do that who are not going to get the help they need.
Let's go to our wild card line. Frank, where are you calling from?
Hi, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, where it's very cold, I bet.
Hell yeah. Now, in Hebrew, heaven, it translates to a vault of light. So you have something with this light thing in Scripture, but I have a feeling it's more along the lines of ancient sun worship handed down through Egyptian means and earlier pre-Torah or Talmudic, a Hebrew writings, and that when you get into the issue of light, my question for you specifically is that you seem to be wanting to equate consciousness from your own hopes and aspirations on a personal level rather than a scientific level into this quantum scale of physics that you're using to justify God as light. The quantum scale is a very small scale. A particle can exist in multiple potential outcomes within that quantum scale, not a large scale such as the entire universe. So have you thought of it based on the scale of the physics here in your research?
Yes, Frank, that is an excellent question. I mean, you begin talking about the Planck scale, which is theoretically, one of the smallest measurements within our known universe. And you are talking just, very minute, microscopic type scales. However, on the atomic level, when you begin talking about quantum particles and particles which are traveling at the speed of light, suddenly size really doesn't play that great a role, as contradictory as that may sound.
No, I'm with you.
And again, it's because of the major factor that for particles that travel at light speed, that time basically stops. So it's really all based upon that principle. But yes, I have considered that, but science would tend to state that it is not a factor.
Yeah, well, time, the speed of light itself, though, means that from a single source, light in a beam or concentrated beam of existence from a 360-degree spherical object travels in all directions uniformly.
Yes.
But since the universe has many points of light, many stars are burning out there in the vastness of space, that light has to travel a distance. Now, time in the particle aspect, yes, is relatively inconspicuous and very vague and almost non-existent, but as a complete wave headed through the vacuum of space, it does have to cover distance. The light we're seeing from the distant galaxies has yet to travel and reach us, and that's when we first see a new star. That's the first time we see that light from that burning sphere in space. So it does have to travel a distance, which distance equals time. Am I not correct in this understanding?
You are absolutely correct, but everything that you are relating is based upon our human classical perception of the universe, our Newtonian perception of the universe, without taking into account Einstein's theory of relativity. And that really is the main point of confusion between humans trying to identify with the light wave, because we are trapped within our four dimensions of height, width, length, and then the fourth dimension of time. We are trapped within time, and light is not. So for us humans, we see light as traveling at 186,000 miles per second. But for the light wave itself, which exists outside of time, it is everywhere at once because of the fact that time does not exist. They are really contradictory arguments, or perspectives is probably a better word, realizing that for light being outside of our own universe, It's just a totally different perspective.
Lee, when we were talking about Poltergeist, Sarah from Ohio writes, and she's got this right on, she says the little woman in Poltergeist said don't go into the light because she knew that the light would not be real light, that it was a trap set by the demons to get people to cross over to the evil side. Now, that I could understand.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yes.
I agree.
That explains why she didn't want them to do that.
Okay, well, good. We've got that answer then.
Now, would you go into the light if something, God forbid, happened to you and you went to this near-death experience? Would you want to keep going?
I would definitely seek out the light. If I was in total darkness, that is the first thing I would look for.
And you would have no mixed feelings about not coming back over?
I would have no mixed feelings whatsoever.
That's interesting. I would want to come back, at least for as long as I could. I feel unfinished.
Well, and at least that's what we feel now on this side. But, you know, once we cross over, things are totally different from what I've heard.
Do you think we'll really ever have a machine to allow us to, let's say, do something like that?
Well, you know, scientifically and with medical probes, it is possible to induce near-death-like experiences by stimulating certain areas of the brain. And I often hear that as an argument for why near-death experiences and dreams and a lot of paranormal phenomenon are not real. But my feeling is that all that's happening when those areas of the brain are being stimulated is it's opening a window which, for people like me, is normally closed, and which allows us to make that connection with the cosmic consciousness or God or whatever you want to call it. So I still feel it's a real phenomenon. I just feel that my explanation is different from there.
Do you believe, though, in like the Book of Revelation, the apocalypse, end times? Do you think all that's happening, going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I right now, my own gut feeling is that the Bible is real and credible. So do I feel that there is an excellent chance for it to happen? Yes. Do I for certainty know it's going to happen? You know, and unless it's based in science, I really don't have that answer.
Well, because if you believe in some of it, don't you have to believe in the whole thing?
Well, you know, there are just too many exceptions.
It's either all true or it isn't. That's my point.
I'm sorry?
It's either true or it isn't.
Well, in my books, I always refer to the fact that the Bible and every other sacred text on the planet is written by the hands of humans, and we have been known to make mistakes. You know, even if the source was God, we've been known to make mistakes. And could it be that we interpreted something wrong and wrote down the wrong thing? I feel that that could well explain it.
Okay, well, that's the tuner-upper. We'll be back now with an hour of phone calls with our guest, Lee Bauman, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.